to Donna in Battle Creek, Minnesota. Michigan. Minnesota. Uh-oh, I'm stuck.
Michigan.
Oh, sorry, Donna. That was pretty pathetic, huh? It's Friday. I'm having a tough time. You need to stop talking to me and start talking to Carlo. What's your question for Carlo?
Okay, so my question is, my husband and I were having a discussion, and I had told him that up until not very long ago, I always thought that we lived by the New Testament, not the Old Testament. Fortunately, my local priest corrected me a few years ago, and he goes, no, we live by the entire Bible.
Right.
So then that sparked a conversation. How do you reconcile the God of the Old Testament with the God of the New Testament? Because the God of the Old Testament is very vengeful. I mean, all you have to do is look at Noah and the ark. Mm-hmm. The entire world was wiped out. And if you look at Sodom and Gomorrah, an entire city was wiped out.
Right.
But then we don't see that God in the New Testament, and that's not the God that is preached about and talked about today.
Right.
How do you reconcile when we are supposed to know that God never changes?
That's right. Well, you just hit the nail on the head in giving us the foundation that God never changes. But here's the key, Donna. Humans change, right? Historical circumstances change. Historical context and times and needs change. So we know metaphysically, you know, from philosophical reasoning that there's not more than one God, there's only one God. And we know from the teaching of Jesus Christ that the God of the Old Testament is his Father, the God of the New Testament. Mm-hmm. So how do we reconcile what God does in the Old in relation to the Israelites and their enemies and how God relates to the human race in the New? Well, I think the key, Donna, is first of all to know that because God is, this is sort of a philosophical principle before you approach divine revelation in the sacred text, is to know that God is the author of life, okay? And God is the one who gives life, and God is the one who takes life. Everybody who dies is a part of the consequential will of God Almighty, right? So God can give life, but he can also take life. And he has the divine prerogative to do that. He's the creator. Our life is entirely dependent on him. We have no right or no claim on our life whatsoever. Now, secondly, the second point to keep in mind is that it's within God's divine prerogative to appoint a particular prophet whose you know, prophetical status is substantiated on a reasonable level in order to command people to carry out what we would call in the Old Testament times, as, or even in the New Testament times, a sort of capital punishment, right? Where you have a particular group of people that are the enemies of God, they're extremely wicked and offering humans in sacrifice, etc. God can deputize a particular individual or a group of individuals in the Old Testament times, in the case of the Israelites, to exercise that capital, that form of capital punishment, okay? So that's the first thing to keep in mind. Now, here's the other key, Donna. When God is relating to the human race in the Old Testament, we're talking about thousands of years ago, right? A little culture, people who are little cultured, people who are living with limited revelation through Moses and etc., but not the revelation of Jesus Christ. So God is going to relate to the Israelites and the people and the human race at that time in a way that's different than how God is going to relate to the human race thousands of years later, who are more mature, who are more cultured, and furthermore, who have now the revelation of Jesus Christ. Think about this, Donna. Here's a great example that my colleague and friend Trent Horn uses. When we were small, my mother would say, son, you know, don't drink the liquids under the sink, right? And son, make sure you hold my hand when we cross the road. Now, when I got older as a teenager, right, when I was, you know, now 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, one of those rules, one of those commands didn't apply anymore. Namely, you don't have to hold mommy's hand to cross the road anymore. But the other rule still applied. Namely, don't drink the substance under the kitchen cabinet. The kitchen sink. So the point being is that we change and we develop over time. So consequently, God is going to relate to the human race in ancient times in a way that from our perspective as grown up, seems a bit weird, right? Or contrary to what we're normally expecting from God. Seems a bit harsh, you might say, right? And a teenager might look back on how a parent treats the little child and view that as somewhat odd. But now that we have the revelation of Jesus Christ, we know that God is not going to relate to the human race in the ways that he did in prior ancient times, because we have this new revelation. It's not that God changed, it's that we changed. And so consequently, there is a change in the way that God is going to relate to us. Is that helpful?
That was a great answer.
Okay.
Yeah, it was very, it made me look at it, completely turned my thoughts around.
Beautiful. And you know, Donna, I want to give a plug for my colleague and friend, Trent Horn. He's got a great book out called Hard Sayings. And in that book, he has, I guess, about a couple of chapters, two, three chapters, even more than that, actually, that deal with all of the aspects, sort of the objections that might arise about the God in the Old Testament. You know, the God of the Old Testament is a wicked God. Look at all these things he does. And Trent goes through each one of those instances, pretty much, and shows how they are reconcilable with the all-good and merciful God that we know exists philosophically and that Jesus reveals to us in his teaching.
Thank you, Donna.